doesn't go out anymore. Just sits at home and rolls her spastic eyes. But every weekend through the door come words of wisdom from the world outside. If you wanna know about the bishop and the actress, if you wanna know how to be a star, if you wanna know about the stains on the mattress, you can read it in the Sunday papers. Stays out in the hall. Why should she go out when the TV's on? Whatever moves beyond these walls, she'll know the facts when Sunday comes along. If you wanna know about the mad punk rockers, if you wanna know how to play guitar, if you wanna know about any other suckers,
contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop looking out over London.
Good night and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight with Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news.
It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
All right, welcome to a Wednesday. Oh, not just any Wednesday. It's another off-camera press briefing Wednesday at the White House. They are doing everything they can, this Trump administration, to kill our free press. So I thought we'd start today by going back to December of 1963, just for a minute.
You once said that you were reading more and enjoying it less. Are you still as avid a newspaper reader, magazine? I remember those of us who traveled with you on the campaign, a magazine wasn't safe around you.
Oh, it is. No. I think it's invaluable, even though it may cause you some, it's never pleasant to be reading things frequently that are not agreeable news, but I would say that it's an invaluable arm of the presidency as a check, really, on what's going on in administration. And more things come to my attention that cause me either concern or give me information. So I would think that Mr. Khrushchev, or operating a totalitarian system, which has many advantages as far as being able to move in secret and all the rest, there's a terrific disadvantage not having the abrasive quality of the press applied to you daily to an administration. When you have, even though we never like it, and even though we don't have, even though we wish they didn't write it, and even though we disapprove, there isn't any doubt that we couldn't do the job at all in a free society without a very, very active press.
There isn't any doubt that we couldn't do the job in a free society without a very, very active press. Too bad Donald Trump is not a student of history, or he might know those words of President John F. Kennedy from 1963, because this administration is doing everything they can to discredit the press. Now, yesterday, hopefully you were here for our regular Tuesday hanging out with Gotta Laugh show. Laffy usually watches the White House press briefings, as do, you know, many other Americans, although less often lately because they are not televising them. Either they don't allow cameras or they don't allow cameras or audio. Today, I know there were no cameras. I don't know if audio was being broadcast today or not. I followed a little bit along on Twitter with some of what was going on. But it's what happened yesterday that was most disturbing. Now, we'll get to healthcare. Of course we will. We'll get to Mitch McConnell because he is the villain of today's program. We'll talk with Cliff Schechter, an old friend of the program, about Mitch McConnell and other things evil going on in our world. But I do want to start with the press and the way this administration is vilifying the media. So yesterday it was Sarah Huckabee Sanders. Have you noticed how she's dolling herself up for the press briefings when she's on camera these days? You know that comes from the top because, you know, in dump size, she's probably not a 10, and that's just not acceptable. She's got the makeup on. She's got the fake eyelashes. She got a haircut. She's got the do going on. It makes my skin crawl a little bit, but it is the reality of life in America in the 21st century right now. So yesterday she took a softball question from somebody at Breitbart, asking about the CNN story. Now, this CNN story, I don't even have all the details here for you. All I know is it was a discredited story. CNN had it up on their website. It wasn't even a story that they broadcast. Here, let me read to you a little bit from the American Prospect, an article from Adele Stan. She wrote, CNN's June 24th retraction of a story about Anthony Scaramucci, a hedge fund billionaire and a member of the Trump transition team, whom the president recently appointed to a senior role at the Export-Import Bank, reportedly happened after Scaramucci, now a member of the government, threatened CNN with a $100 million lawsuit. At issue was this report, since removed from the website, that the Treasury Department and the Senate Intelligence Committee was looking into a meeting Scaramucci had taken while a member of the Trump transition team with the head of a Russian investment fund that is currently chafing against UN sanctions or U.S. sanctions. You see why? I mean, it's complicated. And there's a CNN reporter Thomas Frank, not to be confused with, you know, what's the matter with Kansas Thomas Frank, different Tom Frank. But the CNN reporter relied on a single anonymous source for the claim of the senator's inquiry, and he and his editor, according to CNN sources cited in a New York Times report, failed to subject the story to the news outlet's protocol for vetting prior to publication. So that's a little rundown of what this story was about. It was up on their website for less than a day. Scaramucci, I guess, threatened with a lawsuit. CNN immediately pulled it down. They apologized. I believe they apologized for the story. They didn't issue a disclaimer because they're not saying that it wasn't true, but they apologized because it didn't go through their usual vetting process. And Thomas Frank, the editor and the head of the whole department, all three of them resigned. Now, whether it was, you know, they resigned on their own or they were asked to resign, I don't really know. But the fact of the matter is CNN went above and beyond what they were supposed to do. In fact, let me play this clip for you before I get into what happened at the press briefing yesterday. Shepard Smith on Fox, right, the original fake news channel, and Wall Street Journal's John Bussey. Wall Street Journal, of course, no liberal, left-wing rag by any means. This is them discussing what CNN did and how they reacted to this story.
Unusual. More ring fencing of the White House against
what
the press.
What are they
doing? Yeah, they're attacking the press.
Unless they need a foil.
Yeah, I think it's a desire to build a wall around the White House to limit inquiry into what they do, accountability, and you have a chance to criticize the press. Look, CNN ran a story. They retracted it.
On their website.
On their website, right.
Retracted
they
it.
Apologized for
apologized.
It.
Apologized.
And what they said was, because I want to make sure we get this right, what they said was that they didn't go through their procedures. It didn't make it through standards and practices, they said, and it didn't make it through editorial checking. Afterwards, three people resigned.
Right. And this is what you want to have happen, right? You want to have a news organization.
Yes.
When they find that they got something, that didn't go through their process properly, they retracted and publicly state, we made a mistake.
It's like an example of how to do it.
It's how to do it.
If you make a mistake, Journalism 101 says you admit your mistake, you correct it immediately, and you take corrective action.
Yeah, and even more importantly, you have all those standards, and you have all of those procedures, and you have all those editor's panels
exactly.
for the story to go through. And this one, for some reason, didn't go through that. They apologize. Scaramucci very graciously.
And this is what we're talking about,
exactly.
Which is exactly what they want.
But I think what happened was that it gave her an opportunity to kind of seize on something and then extrapolate out to the press in general, because this one instance, there was an error. Clearly, the entire press is wrong in its inquiry into activities of the White House and possible collusion between the Trump campaign and Russia. And again, it's this desire to build a ring fence around the White House to limit accountability, to limit inquiry, when in fact, the CNN example is precisely what should have happened. They did well. Scaramucci very graciously accepted their apology. The White House could actually learn something from the CNN example. When they get something wrong, being forthright, saying we got something wrong.
It depends on what your goal is.
So there's Shepard Smith of Fox and John Bussey of the Wall Street Journal heaping the praise on CNN for reacting correctly to this story that they hadn't properly vetted before it went live on their website. It wasn't even on the air. But so yesterday in the White House briefing, Sarah Huckabee Sanders went a bit ballistic over CNN and their fake news.
I think it's the constant barrage of fake news directed at this president probably that has garnered a lot of his frustration. You point to that report. There are multiple other instances where that outlet that you referenced has been repeatedly wrong and had to point that out or be corrected. There's a video circulating now, whether it's accurate or not. I don't know, but I would encourage everybody in this room and, frankly, everybody across the country to take a look at it. I think if it is accurate, I think it's a disgrace to all of media, to all of journalism. I think that we have gone to a place where if the media can't be trusted to report the news, then that's a dangerous place for America.
Oh, my God.
And I think if that is the place that certain outlets are going, particularly for the purpose of spiking ratings, and if that's coming directly from the top, I think that's even more scary and certainly more disgraceful. And I hope that that's not the direction we're headed. I hope that outlets that have continued to use either unnamed sources, sometimes stories with no sources at all. We've been going on this Russia-Trump hoax for the better part of a year now with no evidence of anything. Things like the success at the VA barely get covered. They may get covered for an hour at a time, but this story gets covered day in, day out. And I think America is frankly looking for something better. They're looking for something more. And I think they deserve something better from our news media.
Does the president actually expect us not to report on stories of a foreign country trying to influence the presidential election?
I don't think it's that it's expected that you're not to report on, again, actual news if there's something there. But again, I think that there are a lot of things happening in this world that, frankly, a lot of people would like to hear about, whether it's job growth, whether it's deregulation, whether it's tax reform, health care. I think a lot of those things deserve a lot more coverage than they get. And all we're saying is, you know, I think that we should take a really good look at what we are focused on, what we are covering, and making sure that it's actually accurate and it's honest. If we make the slightest mistake, the slightest word is off, it is just an absolute tirade from a lot of people in this room. But news outlets get to go on day after day and cite unnamed sources, use stories without sources.
Oh my God.
You mentioned the Scaramucci story where they had to have reporters resign.
Come on, you're inflaming everybody.
Okay, so you heard that voice come in at the end there. Oh, come on, you're inflaming. I'm cutting it off here because I need to say a couple of things. Shame on her and shame on this White House. The press is doing their job. In fact, instead of me taking her to task, I'm going to let Brian Karam do it. Now, I've never heard of Brian Karam before. Apparently, he's a reporter for the Sentinel newspapers, including the DC Sentinel and Playboy magazine, of all places. Who knew? And he's been covering the White House for a long, long time. And he stood up and he interrupted her by saying,
"Come on, you're inflaming everybody right here, right now with those words. This administration has done that as well. Why in the name of heavens, any one of us, right, are replaceable, and any one of us, if we don't get it right, the audience has the opportunity to turn the channel or not read us.
I think you have
been elected to serve for 4 years at least. There's no option other than that. We're here to ask you questions.
Right.
You're here to provide the answers. And what you just did is inflammatory to people all over the country who look at it and say, see, once again, the president's right and everybody else out here is fake media. And everybody in this room is only trying to do their job."
Brian Karam. Yeah. I don't know who that guy is, but I'm going to seek him out and find his stuff and try to read him more. Exactly. Robert Hill, New York City, in the chat room says, echoes of Nixon, the press is the enemy. In their minds, right? And then he said he's the reason we claim that we read Playboy for the articles. But he's absolutely right. You know, the White House, and I've heard this from a number of hosts that I watch on TV and journalists that I read, the White House is always using unnamed sources. It's okay when they do it, but if the media does it, then it's fake news. If it's an article or a story critical of Trump, then they call it fake news. But if it's, you know, promoting what they want to push, then I guess it's real news. This is shameful. And again, this is only the beginning. Today, once again, no cameras allowed in the White House briefing room that have had cameras in the briefing room for decades. This is the new normal, and it's really fucking scary. They want you to cover what they want you to cover. In fact, you know what? I don't think I brought it up here. Trump, you know, had I wonder if I have the whole clip here. Hold on, I do. All right, so yesterday, Donald Trump summoned all of the entire Republican caucus of the Senate to the White House to meet with him to talk about Mitch McConnell's, you know, Trump care health care bill. And at the beginning of it, they had the table set up in like a big square so they could all see each other, almost 50 of them, not all 52, almost 50 of them. And at the beginning, Donald Trump had the had the media in there. And so his opening statement, which I'm about to play for you, was only for the media. Listen to how he mugs for the cameras. Listen to the smarmy, slimy, sleazy way he talks to the press, how he gets across what he wants to get across, and then he dismisses them.
We're going to try and solve the problem. So I invited all of you, and I think we have either 52 out of 52 or 50 out of 52. And John, either one is pretty good, I think, as a percentage. So we're going to talk and we're going to see what we can do. We're getting very close. But for the country, we have to have health care. And it can't be Obamacare, which is melting down. The other side is saying all sorts of things before they even knew what the bill was. This will be great if we get it done. And if we don't get it done, it's just going to be something that we're not going to like. And that's okay. And I understand that very well. But I think we have a chance to do something very, very important for the public, very, very important for the people of our country that we love. So I'll ask the press to leave. I greatly appreciate you folks being here. We love you very much. You're very kind and very understanding. But we will now ask you to leave. Thank you very much, everybody.
And so he asks them to leave, and they get on with their meeting. This, he is so calculated. The same way he puts up fake pictures of a fake Time magazine covers with him on it. He's been on the cover of Time magazine, but I guess the copy or the picture wasn't to his liking enough. So he had mock-up Time magazine covers made and placed them into, now the number is up to 8 of his properties, framed copies of this fake Time magazine cover in 8, the count is up to 8 now, of his golf courses and hotels and other properties around the world, it seems, because he only wants things that paint him in a positive light. The man is not only a narcissist, he's a megalomaniac. And I don't hear that word used enough, but he is somebody obsessed with power. A key paragraph from the New York Times article about that meeting that happened at the White House yesterday, that's way down. It's like, 3 paragraphs from the bottom. So most people don't get that far. But listen to this. It says, a senator who supports the bill left the meeting at the White House with a sense that the president did not have a grasp of some basic elements of the Senate plan and seemed especially confused when a moderate Republican complained that opponents of the bill would cast it as a massive tax break for the wealthy, according to an aide who received a detailed readout of the exchange. Mr. Trump said he planned to tackle tax reform later, ignoring the repeal's tax implications, the staff member added. Donald Trump has no clue what's in Mitch McConnell's tax bill. All he knows is that he can keep saying, it's terrific, it's the best, it's better, it's going to be cheaper, it's going to cover everyone, it's got heart. This one's got heart. Yes, because I want heart. The man is a walking lie. I don't know if you saw it or not, but in the New York Times, there's a great op-ed writer, David Leonhardt, I believe is his name. And earlier this week, or maybe it was over the weekend, he notated or annotated, whatever the word is, all of Trump's lies, and I don't know if it's possible to get them all in, but Donald Trump's lies since the day he took office to today, and I don't, the only days that he didn't lie were days when he was either out of the country or at one of his properties and didn't go on Twitter and didn't make any public statements. Those were the only days that he didn't openly lie to the American people, and this fucking asshole has the gall to call news fake news. Now, look, if you've listened to me for any amount of time, you know I have my problems with the corporate media and especially cable news. I've had my differences with hosts on every one of those channels, and I have a love-hate relationship with some of them. I've been blocked by Morning Joe. But the fact of the matter is, journalists are out there doing their job. And if we ever needed journalists, now is the time we need them more than ever. Because without journalists and without the courageous people in the White House and in the administration who are so mortified and horrified by what Donald Trump and his minions are doing, that they're letting information out, without them, we'd know nothing that's going on. So those people are heroes. You know, I put in a call to he is fake news. You're right. Rainbow 48 in the chat room. He is fake news. I put in a call to, or I sent an email to the head of the National Whistleblowers Center, and I'm going to have to try again because I haven't heard back from them recently. Now is the time where we need to embrace whistleblowers and, yes, leakers, and there's a difference. We'll need to get into that again one of these days. Anyway, with all that going on, it's more important than ever that we pay attention to our press and that we appreciate what they do. And, yeah, and applaud CNN when they realize that a story they put on their website wasn't properly vetted, and then they did the right thing by it to the point where even Shepard Smith and a guy from the Wall Street Journal applauds them for doing the right thing, not call them fake news. So we need to push back on that. And we need to keep pushing back on this healthcare tax cut bill, the wealth care bill. That's what it is. It's wealth care for millionaires. I know yesterday we learned that it was being delayed until after the 4th of July, and it still is. However, Mitch McConnell is diligently working behind the scenes, and remember, he is sly like the fox, to rewrite, and he's in touch with the Congressional Budget Office probably hourly, trying to make fixes to this bill so that they can get it rescored. They want to get it to the CBO by Friday, have it rescored in the 2 weeks or the week and a half that Congress will be out for the 4th of July weekend. They leave on Friday. They come back. I think the House comes back on the 10th. Senate comes back on the 11th. By the time they get back, Mitch McConnell wants the new score back, and then he wants to vote sometime in the 3 weeks before they go out for a month, for the month of August. So I've got that, I think, most of that in What's News. So we'll listen to What's News. We'll come back on the other side with Cliff Schechter to talk about not only how evil Donald Trump is, but all the things you need to know about Mitch McConnell. That's coming up. So stick around. I'm Nicole Sandler, NicoleSandler.com, and the Progressive Voices Network.
I read the news today.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
After pushing for a vote on legislation to repeal the Affordable Care Act before the 4th of July recess, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell Tuesday afternoon delayed the vote.
We're going to continue the discussions within our conference on the differences that we have that we're continuing to try to litigate. Consequently, we will not be on the bill this week, but we're still working toward getting at least 50 people in a comfortable place. We're going down to the White House at 4 o'clock. The president invited us to come down. The White House has been very much involved in these discussions. They're very anxious to help, and we appreciate the invitation, and I hope all of our members will head down. I think that will likely be the case.
After McConnell's announcement, three more Republicans announced their opposition to the bill in its current form. Jerry Moran of Kansas, Shelley Moore Capito of West Virginia, and Rob Portman of Ohio. At the White House meeting with most of the 52 Republican senators, Trump said it was vital to reach agreement on the Senate health care measure.
So we're going to talk, and we're going to see what we can do. We're getting very close. But for the country, we have to have health care. And it can't be Obamacare, which is melting down. This will be great if we get it done. And if we don't get it done, it's just going to be something that we're not going to like. And that's okay. And I understand that very well.
Senator Susan Collins of Maine is one of the senators who came out strongly against the bill after the Congressional Budget Office analysis said it would cause 22 million Americans to lose insurance over the next decade.
I will say that I have so many fundamental problems with the bill that have been confirmed by the CBO report that it's difficult for me to see how any tinkering is going to satisfy my fundamental and deep concerns about the impact of the bill.
She also expressed frustration with the administration, but did attend the meeting.
This president is the first president in our history who has had neither political nor military experience, and thus it has been a challenge to him to learn how to interact with Congress and how to push his agenda forward. I also believe it would have been better had the president started with infrastructure, which has bipartisan support, rather than tackling a politically divisive and technically complex issue like health care.
Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer explained that the Democrats remain united against the legislation, despite the tactics he says will come from the Republicans.
Over the next couple of weeks, we know that Leader McConnell will try to use a slush fund to buy off Republicans, cut backroom deals to try and get this thing done. So we're going to watch this bill and all the machinations behind closed doors as they might be like a hawk. But the truth is, as CBO made clear yesterday, the Republicans cannot excise the rotten core at the center of their health care bill. No matter what tweaks they may add in the next week and a half, no matter how the bill changes around the edges, it is fundamentally flawed at the center.
Congress is scheduled to leave D.C. Friday for their week-long July 4th break, returning July 10th and 11th, with then only 3 weeks in session before their month-long August recess. Stay tuned. Tuesday's White House briefing was on camera, with Sarah Huckabee Sanders at the podium railing against the media for what she deemed the, quote, Trump-Russia hoax, and calling out CNN as fake news for a story which they found to be erroneous and addressed by retracting it, with the reporters involved resigning.
I think it's the constant barrage of fake news directed at this president, probably, that has garnered a lot of his frustration. You point to that report. There are multiple other instances where that outlet that you referenced has been repeatedly wrong and had to point that out or be corrected. I think that we have gone to a place where if the media can't be trusted to report the news, then that's a dangerous place for America. And I think if that is the place that certain outlets are going, particularly for the purpose of spiking ratings, and if that's coming directly from the top, I think that's even more scary and certainly more disgraceful.
Sanders was interrupted by Brian Karam of the Sentinel Newspapers and Playboy Magazine, who said what many in the room were no doubt thinking.
Come on, you're inflaming everybody right here, right now with those words. This administration has done that as well. Why in the name of heavens? Any one of us, right, are replaceable, and any one of us, if we don't get it right, the audience has the opportunity to turn the channel or not read us.
I think you have
been elected to serve for 4 years at least. There's no option other than that. We're here to ask you questions.
Right.
We're here to provide the answers. And what you just did is inflammatory to people all over the country who look at it and say, see, once again, the president's right and everybody else out here is fake media. And everybody in this room is only trying to do their job.
Speaking of fake news, Donald Trump has framed fake Time magazine covers with his picture hanging in at least five of his golf club properties. A spokesman for Time said that the magazine had asked the Trump Organization to remove the phony cover from the walls where it was on display.
I got good news.
And that's a look at what's news for today. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider a contribution. We are 100% listener supported and can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com/donate.
Can't afford a monthly donation? Is that what's getting you down, Bunky? But maybe you shop on Amazon.com occasionally?
Well then, just use the NicoleSandler.com Amazon portal, and we'll get a small commission on all your purchases.
But I just bought...
Don't worry, we can't see what you bought.
Just bookmark Amazon through the NicoleSandler.com portal, and use it. Every purchase helps Nicole stay on the air. And now, back to Nicole on Progressive Voices and NicoleSandler.com.
All right, I'm excited to talk to our next guest because it's been a long time since we've spoken. Cliff Schechter is a media mogul. He's a PR maven. He's an author and a columnist and a smart guy. Cliff, you there?
I'm here. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. And how about you?
Pretty good. Pretty good. You know, as well as anybody can do in our current situation we find ourselves in.
We are living in insane times. I was just railing against what this administration is doing to our free press. You know, I started the show with a clip from JFK from 1963 talking about, I'll play the tail end of it
for
you and you'll get the gist of it here.
Having the abrasive quality of the press applied to you daily to an administration. When you have, even though we never like it, and even though we don't, even though we wish they didn't write it, and even though we disapprove, there still is there isn't any doubt that we couldn't do the job at all in a free society without a very, very active press.
So there's JFK saying we couldn't do the job in a free society without a very, very active press, and we have an administration who's trying to shut the free press down.
Yeah, well, I mean, the problem is that the Republican Party line, you know, for about 30 years now, and increasingly so, has become to, you know, something where the foil is all the referees. Because the truth of the matter is as Stephen Colbert so well put it, that reality has a liberal bias. I'm not saying every time or all the time, but for the most part, the Democrats and let's say, you know, progressivism, liberalism, whatever you want to call it overall, has embraced science, has embraced fact, has embraced history. And the only way, you know, conservatism has become a clown show. I mean, that speaks for itself. So it's gotten worse each election cycle. Obviously, the pinnacle of this idiocy has been the election of Donald Trump and the current, you know, jokers that reside in our Congress and state legislatures, sadly, around the country. And so the press is to them is not something as JFK saw it or Eisenhower or even Reagan and Clinton in really a bipartisan way as something that often was a big pain, but they saw as having a legitimate role because they still respected our democracy enough to realize that that was one of the checks on power, just
right.
Like the judiciary that the Trump people also attack, just like scientists, which the Trump people also attack, the CBO, which Trump people attack. You know, we can go on and on. The FBI, any organization that has a nonpartisan factual function in our society to be a check on power and to provide sort of the basis for what we go on, reality, facts, statistics, what have you, they have tried to go after and destroy, and the press most of all. So this just fits in with the Trump mentality of all, which is if you question him at all, you're on the other side.
Right. And it's not to say that all of the media is blameless. Look, I look at cable news and realize that they share, you know, they need to take, you know, the lion's share of the blame for Trump being in the White House, the way they pushed him, the way they ran those damn rallies, start to finish nonstop because it was good for ratings.
Jeff Zucker at CNN, right? I'm sorry, I mean to cut you off.
No, go.
I mean, the irony. Jeff Zucker at CNN is sitting around putting all these rallies on whatever, and now CNN are the ones who are being ripped to shreds.
That's right.
You know what? They deserve it. I it's not that I don't – I still believe we need a media out there and whatever, but, you know, at this point, I'm not even sure we're helped by most of the cable stations.
No.
They do more to undermine democracy than help it. So, you know, I can look at a publication like the New York Times that – made a lot of mistakes and was terrible, in my opinion, many times during the election mm-hmm. in some of the things they said and they did. At least, you know, they serve a solid function and are necessary.
I agree. And the Washington Post, both the New York Times
Washington
and the Washington Post, are doing stellar work. And then, of course, today you have Trump going on a Twitter tirade against Jeff Bezos and Amazon because mm-hmm. Jeff Bezos bought the Washington Post. Right. If you're not
ahead,
kissing
sorry.
His ring, if you're not, you know, bowing at his feet, then you're fake news. I mean, we got Fox. I don't know if you ever heard this, but, you know, I put this together for Fox a long, long time ago before the term fake news ever became part of our regular our lexicon.
Your original source for fake news. Fox News. We make shit up.
You know, they never used it.
I remember hearing that. Yeah.
but it's been there for them. And the thing is, he quotes them day and night. Even though they make shit up, that's what they do 24/7. They are a propaganda outlet because they're complimentary of him. That's his go-to news source. I mean, that's where he gets his briefings from. Forget intelligence yep. community. He gets it from Fox.
Well, and this all comes full circle, Nicole, because, you know, in the early 1970s, not quite as disgusting, a little bit younger, but well, yeah, pretty much just as disgusting, just a little bit younger. The late Roger Ailes,
mm-hmm.
when he was working for Nixon, saw that the press actually did their job, which led to Richard Nixon having to resign over the crimes he committed, was determined to not allow that to happen again. And that's where it all, you know, a lot of this starts is him saying, you know, we've got to loosen up. We've got to loosen up the rules and the regulations and make sure that we can have propaganda outlets out there competing with the mainstream media. We have to undermine it. We have to corrupt it. And so he was dreaming of it, you know, back in the 70s, and along came Rupert Murdoch. And in the 90s, what ginned up a lot of the scandals and probably helped lead to impeachment of Bill Clinton over nothing, was Fox News. But also, you know, he was an advisor to Reagan. It wasn't an accident that, that during the Reagan years, they got rid of the equal time rules on radio in the mid to late 80s. And suddenly the rise of Rush Limbaugh comes around in 1991, 92. And then a million little Limbaughs sprung forth in localities throughout the country. They did everything they could to create this alternate atmosphere where reality didn't exist. Propaganda did. They played to all the kinds of conservative, you know, paranoia, conspiracy, fantasy that, you know, that we were warned about in the 60s and 70s by scholars like Richard Hofstadter. And this is the this became the end result of it, is that they don't have to, you know, so you now have a president who can essentially deem what's real and what's not. And he can say, he can actually point to news outlets that back up his fake point of view every day.
That's it.
And that's, you know, I mean, we allowed this to happen. I mean, again, we on the left and others, certainly the mainstream media, are far from blameless because, you know, we saw all this during World War II with fascism. And we learned those lessons. And that shaped a lot of the way we decided to look at our institutions post-World War II. But as time went on, particularly an institution like the media, we allowed that to get degraded further and further as more and more people died that were alive then, and we forgot those lessons that we learned or relearned. We allowed, you know, we said, oh, we don't need, you know, we don't need equal time on radio. You know, let's just go by market forces. Well, right-wing paranoia sells, which it does, then that's that may dominate the market, but that doesn't mean it's good for a democracy. And that's a problem.
It's a big problem. You know, the other problem, Cliff Schechter is with us, is, you know, that we have, again, it's this echo chamber. We used to say never again, and yet history keeps repeating itself in the worst ways possible. They also sow confusion, and that's what's happening today. And I don't know if you noticed. Yesterday, there were small, little, minor victory celebrations on the left because Mitch McConnell came out and said, okay, we're not going to have a vote on the health care bill, the wealth care bill is what I call it, this week. The CBO score was so, you know, horrific. It showed what a cruel piece of legislation this truly is. And so now the members are going to all have to go home for the 4th of July recess. They have a week off, and they're going to go home, and they're going to and you know, have to deal with their constituents asking them questions and saying, please don't kill me. You know, that's what I say when I call Marco Rubio's office, because without the Affordable Care Act, I'm uninsurable. And, you know, I'm now in a couple of days, 10 months cancer free. Doesn't mean it won't come back. I still need tests and lots of doctor's appointments. And without the Affordable Care Act, I likely don't have insurance. So this could be my death sentence.
Yeah, and I don't want to compare myself to what you've gone through recently and quite courageously, but I, you know, I'm in the same boat in terms of likely being uninsurable, because when I was 29, I had Graves' disease.
That'll do it.
So that's with me the rest of my life for having to be on thyroid medication and stuff like that, and that makes me, I've got a pre-existing condition. They often ban people like me because of that too. So, we're not just talking about other people here. It's our lives.
It's all of us. And you know, anyone in, and I'm older than you, but in our age group, you live life, you have a pre-existing condition. And once again, they want to take us back to where we were before. But now I'm hearing, here's where the confusion comes in. Mitch McConnell is saying, well, we're still, you know, working on this. We're going to get something by Friday. We're going to get it together by Friday. I heard Tom Hartman before I came on, here on the Progressive Voices Network, say something about, they're going to take it for a vote on Friday. No, they're not going to put it up for a vote on Friday. He wants to send it back to the CBO to be scored on Friday so that when they come back from their recess on July 10th and 11th, the new bill, the newer version of the bill, the not so cruel version, will be scored. And then they have 3 weeks to do whatever they're going to do and vote on it before they go for another month, because they're off for the whole month of August. So that's where we are now. But I think they've got Fox and they've got so much confusion going on there in their own little echo chamber that people don't know what end is up. They think, oh, we have some breathing room here. We don't have any breathing room here.
No, we don't. And people need to keep the pressure on. Everybody And that really is everybody has done an amazing job in sort of in doing that. And really sort of, you know, obviously calling and these groups that have shown up, and but everybody has to keep that pressure up. I mean, there are, you know, again, I think as some people have already said, this thing, you know, nobody on the Republican side, or not nobody, but a big chunk of them really don't want to vote for this thing. But they feel like they have to, and their funders are telling them what to do. This thing passes with either 50 votes or it fails with 35 or 32. It doesn't end up with 48 or 49.
Right.
You know what I mean? I mean, either they're all going to jump off. Everybody who thinks they're at all vulnerable and people up for re-election, you know, in 18, or they're going to keep almost everybody on. And so it's our jobs to make sure. I want to throw out one other point, which I think is key while we're talking about the degradation of the press.
Mm-hmm.
There's also no one, I would say, in government right now who has been more responsible for the degradation of our democracy than Mitch McConnell, who often skates by. And this isn't pointed out because he's such a weird looking, weird acting character. And he sort of keeps quiet about things. In a way, you know, he doesn't tweet out stuff like Trump. He's a lot smarter. He's every bit as evil, but he's a lot smarter, so he doesn't send it out. But people can easily forget. I mean, when history goes down of this period, really of our U.S. history, he will be in the sort of non-presidential pile with people like Henry Calhoun and other villains of U.S. history, because people don't get what he's done in terms of turning the filibuster into something that, which was something that was only used in very, you know, unique circumstances, right, to a regular occurrence, and the blocking of that Supreme Court vote. Excuse me. So we're already now seeing how terrible Gorsuch is going to be for the next 30 plus years.
Horrible.
And, you know, blocking justices throughout Obama's administration, deciding to not work with the Obama administration on virtually anything. I mean, he has so corrupted the process. He has so polarized the Senate. He's sort of done to the Senate what Newt Gingrich did to the House.
But he's done it he's done it more quietly. Newt Gingrich was very vociferous, yeah, about it. He was out in front.
He's a loudmouth clown.
Exactly.
Like Trump. I mean,
right.
Trump, you know, like Newt Gingrich is only maybe a half step better than Trump in terms of being a loudmouth clown.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas McConnell is much smarter and much quieter about it. Exactly right. And so a lot of people haven't seen it, but he has so corrupted, you know, the institutions of our government with what he's done, so just toxified them. And there's just no doubt. I mean, that is as damaged our democracy. Even what he's done the last few, I mean, he finds a new, you know, we always talk about the norms that Donald Trump destroys, and people forget this guy's been doing it for years, and he finds new norms to destroy all the time. Even with this secret meeting about this secret bill where apparently they were sitting, you know, in an oxygen-filled room, you know, with better hidden than Bin Laden, you know, so they didn't have to talk to the media or their constituents or anybody. I mean, this is just unheard of in a democracy that relies on transparency and open debate. This is something it's an attack, a direct attack on democracy, he just did, and it's one of many.
And just to underscore, I know I don't have to explain that he's a hypocrite, just to underscore what a hypocrite he is, this is Mitch McConnell on January 20th, 2010. This was right around the time Obamacare was being passed into law, and he said this.
The reason the American people didn't accept this health care bill is because they knew it had no bipartisan support, in addition to the fact that it was an awful proposal, you know, cooked up behind closed doors with a whole lot of special deals. Everything about it turned the American people off. That's not the way to operate. The president ought to take this as a message to recalibrate how he wants to govern. And if he wants to govern in the middle, I think we'll be happy to meet him there.
This is the guy who will not invite Democrats to talk, will not entertain,
right,
the idea of fixing what's wrong with the Affordable Care Act. He wants to scrap the whole thing, do away with it, and, you know, give their Republican donors billions of dollars in tax cuts.
That's right. And when the Affordable Care Act was a model Republican bill and the more conservative alternative to Hillary Care,
mm-hmm,
people like McConnell and Orrin Hatch and all of them voted for it.
That's right.
Right? They actually voted they voted at one point to support mandates, what suddenly became the biggest evil in the history of the Republic. I mean, now McConnell, again, much like Donald Trump in another way, doesn't stand for anything or believe anything. When he started his career in Kentucky and he worked for former Senator Marlowe and former Senator Cook, who are both moderate Republicans, he was very outspoken about being a moderate Republican. At the time, he was pro-choice. Hmm. He supported an assault weapons ban. The guy, you know, he actually wanted to ban PACs when they were benefiting Democrats in the 80s and 90s. And then suddenly when the Republicans took over, he became the guy that the campaign finance reform was an evil against the Constitution. He's never stood for anything but Mitch McConnell. And much like Donald Trump, there's no core beliefs there. There's no core value system. It's all about power. And again, the people can forget because Donald Trump is so loud and so such a ridiculous clown character. But it's to forget the damage. You know, the ground had to kind of be plowed for someone like Trump to come along. And it's to forget the damage that McConnell has done over decades now to our system, particularly since the Republicans have held a majority this second time again.
So people are saying, you know, yesterday it was like, oh, Mitch McConnell made he erred. He had an error in judgment. There are others who are like you, Cliff, who have been watching this guy for years, saying he knew exactly what he was doing. There's enough of a $200 billion padding in this bill that still allows them to bring it in under reconciliation rules because it'll lower the deficit by $300 billion or something like that, that this is all his game plan, that this, you know, sending it back to the CBO by Friday, that this was all part of his plan to get this through. Do you think that's the case?
Well, I think he's a tactician. I think he has multiple plans going on at any time. So I think his hope was to get this piece of garbage through without too much light shown on it and having full Republican support. But there's no doubt that this was a clean blackup plan. If he had to go to this, he was ready to go to this. He built into the bill places where they can cut more of the deficit, or they can add a little money into the thing and still cut the deficit to try to have some of the senators who jumped off of it say, oh, look, I got this added in, so I'll jump back on because now it does what I needed to do, and blah, 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 blah. I mean, he's always, you know, again, he's very smart and he works his butt off. You know, those are two things you just have to accept about him and give him credit for, you know, even while saying he is an absolutely uniquely evil character. He uses all of that to hurt people. But you can't underestimate how hard he'll work and frankly, that he will out, you know, he will think ahead. And he'll have five different pathways to try to get to where he wants to get to. It doesn't mean he can't be stopped. He's been stopped before. He's lost a majority before, you know, but you need to know this about him going in. And people should never, that's why no one can let up, you know, keep the pedal to the metal, and everybody needs to stay on this and keep doing what they're doing, especially in, you know, a half dozen to a dozen states where there are senators who might have to worry about this, about losing their seats if this is to go through.
Well, the one that is most talked about, of course, is Dean Heller of Nevada. He's the only senator up for reelection in 2018 in which Hillary Clinton won the state. So he's the most at risk. He's the first one who actually came out and said, I can't vote for it the way it is. And he's been the loudest opponent of it, with, I guess, Susan Collins being a second. Did you notice when they had the thing at the White House, there's dump in the middle. He surrounds himself with Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski, and Dean Heller all around him. He's such a miserable showman. Oh. He's a circus barker. And the thing really is, Mitch McConnell knows that Donald Trump has no clue what's in this bill. I don't know if you heard, there was a line in a New York Times article about that meeting. A senator who supports the bill left the meeting with a sense that the president did not have a grasp of some basic elements of the Senate plan. He seemed especially confused.
I don't think he understands health insurance at all. I mean, he's dumb. I mean, let's just be frank about it. He's not a smart person. He has no capacity to pay attention to anything for longer than 30 seconds. So these people have to literally take things and draw like stick figures on them on a page or two and make, you know, happy smiley faces, you know, and put pictures in between, like, you know, two sentences here, a sentence there. I mean, you know, we all knew this before. The thing is Donald Trump had a whole record and had shown the type of miserable character he was his entire life. You don't suddenly change who you are and who you in your life and who you were during a campaign when you get into office. That ends up being, for good or for ill, who you are. And in Trump's case, it's somebody who manifestly, you know, does not possess, I'd say, even one positive quality that should have led him to be president of the United States. I mean, there's just nothing in his repertoire that makes him somebody who can do this job,
no,
as we've all seen. So, and he surrounded himself with them, as you said, you know, and I would just say quickly, you know, there are a number of other pressure points. There are some people, it seems like, because they're in very poor states, you know, people you wouldn't expect to maybe want to, you know, people like Shelley Moore Capito of West Virginia and Cassidy of Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
And then you even have some who you brought up Dean Heller, but people need to remember that Arizona and Texas both moved in the Democrats' direction in the presidential race. And Ted Cruz has Beto O'Rourke, has real opposition coming
yes.
up, and Jeff Flake, who's up in 18 also, who didn't win by very much last time in a state that's increasingly Democratic, moving that direction. So those are two other pressure points, and the rumors are that Susan Collins has had all she can take of the partisanship of the Senate and wants to run for governor
oh, wow.
in 2018 in Maine. So those are four people that right away, everybody should concentrate on going after. And there's others, too. I mean, there are, you know, Rob Portman in my state here of Ohio
mm-hmm.
is somebody every once in a while, he used to be a bona fide moderate and has gone to the right with his party in many shameless ways. But votes with, you know, will move away and do something more moderate occasionally. And this is the kind of thing you could potentially win his vote. And there's others. So people just need to keep the pressure on, you know, that group of senators.
Cliff Schechter, do you think this is going to go through? I mean, it scares the daylights out of me.
Yeah, it scares me, too. It scares me. Obviously, I'm worried about myself, my family, but mm-hmm. I worry about so many people like you, friends and people I know, and just people I don't know.
Yeah.
There are millions of us. I have a hard time. I'm sorry, go ahead.
There are millions of us.
Yes, there are. And there'll be 22 million of us who will lose insurance. As anywhere in its current form, I still have a hard time seeing it pass. You know, again, I've learned to never underestimate McConnell, and I've mm-hmm. also learned to never underestimate how pathetic the so-called moderates are in terms of caving. But I really think they saw what happened with the House. They saw some of the people showing up at some of these House members, town halls, and that some of these House members are going to lose their seats because they voted for this thing, most
yeah,
likely.
Hopefully.
So I do kind of wonder if we'll be able to peel off enough senators. You know, I'm cautiously optimistic. Let's put it that way.
You know, there's another. I know you're sitting in your car outside. I hope it's okay to say this. You're on the board of Planned Parenthood, and you have a board yeah. meeting coming up. This bill also includes the, quote, defunding of Planned Parenthood. Well, Planned Parenthood is not in the federal budget, but it's paid like hospitals are paid. And so Medicaid patients, and in many places, many states, and many especially rural parts of the nation, places that voted for Donald Trump, that's the only place
yeah.
women can go for health care. And all of a sudden, they're not going to be able to go anymore.
No, that's exactly right. I don't think a lot of people understand that. You nailed it. I mean, which is the defunding is saying that Medicaid funds cannot be used for Planned Parenthood. And as you said, you know, this whole joke about, you know, community health centers they throw out there, which is utter garbage, as every study has shown. There are some, and there are some great ones. There aren't nearly enough to cover most of this country
right.
if Planned Parenthood is not funded. And women, particularly, as you pointed out, ironically enough, in those areas that voted most heavily for Donald Trump, women there will be women who literally have zero access to health care, or at least the kind of reproductive health care they need because of this. And so, you know, I'm cautiously optimistic there, too, because it seems like so far Collins and Murkowski are holding out. And Heller seems to be questionable on whether they would vote to defund Planned Parenthood. So I think that makes it harder for them to get to a majority. So I'm hoping no, but yeah, I am about to go into a board meeting for Planned Parenthood of Southwest Ohio, and I'm sure we're going to be talking about it, you know?
I'm sure. You know, the other big issue, and I've learned over the past few days that Ohio is the I guess ground zero of opioid addiction in this country. It's pretty bad
yep.
down here in South Florida too, where I live. This is where the treatment centers are. So people come from all over the country here to go to a residential center that takes the Medicaid money. That'll dry up. Some of these places are not entirely on the up and up either. But when you cut off funds for mental health care, for treatment of opioid addiction, for so many services that people need just to stay alive. I don't know what they're thinking. I mean, this is...
No, that's right. And we need it. We are. It's terrible in southeast Ohio, probably about an hour and a half east of me, Portsmouth, Ohio, that area is ground zero. It's heartbreaking, opioid addiction. And, we, you know, that's a whole other conversation of how we've done, you know, we've allowed another thing they've done to us, or we've allowed it to be done to ourselves. You know, hey, you got a knee injury, take this, and then you get addicted to it.
Oh, tell me about it.
You end up having to go out eventually and use heroin. It's a tragedy. It's despicable. And to pull money, so that's another thing, because you have the, you know, senators like Portman and like Capito, because it's bad in West Virginia and some of these other rural areas. Again, it's mostly hit rural and exurban areas, and they're talking about, you know, oh, well, we need to help this, and we've, you know, and they've made this something that they stand up for. Well, you can't claim to stand up for it if you vote for this bill, because this bill is going to kill people. I mean, obviously, for many reasons.
Yep.
But people who need this treatment are going to be cut off, and they're going to be screwed. And that's
absolutely
just a fact. And it's
I've been pushing people towards TrumpCareToolkit.org, which has all these senators that we've talked about today, those most predisposed to possibly doing the right thing here. Tells you how to contact them. Please do. We've got to work those phones. Do it every single day. Cliff Schechter, thank you so much. It's been too long. I really appreciate you coming on today. And hopefully
my
we can.
My pleasure. Let's do it again soon. And thank you for having me on, and keep on fighting.
You got it. You too. Thank you, Cliff.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye. Cliff Schechter. Bye. Find him on the Twitter at Cliff Schechter. He's the head of Libertas LLC. So if you need a great PR guy, he's your guy too. With that, we are done for a Wednesday. Tomorrow, Thursday, as promised yesterday, Jackie Schechner will be here to talk a little bit more about this healthcare bill. Thanks for listening. I'll talk to you tomorrow.